Yet sometimes it is needed that we refer to some aspect of the teaching of the Buddha as a way to give the context in which the practice is understood, which doesn't mean that it is the only context with which one can understand. Yet it is important if some notion of where does the practice lead and what does it really entail. The Buddha taught for 40 years, according to the story, and in a few days, in a retreat of 5 or 6 days, we like to see a few of the most important points which we may need for our practice. So sometimes it may be slightly dense or maybe too early to speak about certain matters. Yet we cannot postpone it till next month, since you and I won't be here. So I think it's important sometimes, even if it is too early, yet to go into some of the important aspects of the reason for our practice of meditation. And it's not to speak about philosophy. I will try as much as possible to really connect with our practice, exactly what we are practicing all the day long and what is our concern. Again, you can maybe express it in different terms, yet I will here choose the traditional way of speaking. Again, as I said the other day, as a matter of honesty, not trying to find another system or my own words, pretending that I myself understood something on my own. And I like to start by speaking about the notion of time, which is very important in our practice of meditation. And one French writer expressed it in a beautiful way. He said that the need for duration conceals life from us, and only its impossibility frees us. He points out here that the need for duration, the way that we are clinging to this notion, actually is taking the life away from us. And that only when we may understand or realize the impossibility of time, then maybe we may find life back. Now again, it's not a philosophical discussion, but it's really related to the way we are experiencing every instant. I think this notion of time in our practice, it's very revealing. So much are we used to organize our world and our activities in matter of time, in matter of duration. So I may wonder how long will last my Dharma talk. How much time do I have to speak tonight? I always say 1 hour was planned and a few minutes have gone, so maybe I have, I don't know, 46 minutes left. But where are those 46 minutes that I could use? Do I have them now? Or will it take me 46 minutes to have 46 minutes? Yet it still would be somehow misleading, because every instant I'm getting one, I'm losing one. So at the end of those 46 minutes, I won't have 46 minutes either, because I will have lost the 45 before. So we may believe that we have time, but actually, what does it mean? If we had time, and possessed it, then it may mean that I could maybe jump into in the future after 20 minutes and come back after 10 minutes. I could do something with it if I have it. But beside this very moment, I just don't have any other thing. There's no way that I can do anything about it. However, in our experiencing, we may come to a sitting and we may say it is a 45-minute sitting and wonder after sometimes how much is left. Maybe it's 30 minutes already, so 15 minutes is left. And by this way of organizing our meditation, our practice, we just keep always a concept in mind. This way of holding the notion of duration is there, that is a concept, something which is in our mind. And if I have this sense of duration, the energy which is taken in the perception, in the keeping of that, is the attention or the awareness which is not at my disposal to experience this very instant, maybe the bodily sensation. It is like if I imagine that in a crowd you may have lost your child and you are looking for it. So you would really have this thing in mind, the image of your child, very strongly, and you will run everywhere to find it. And the only thing that you will have in mind will be the image of your child. That one understands very well. Now, with the sense of duration, is what we most of the time are doing, keeping a sense of duration. That we are going about in our daily life, having that image, that concept, that we are working with it, changing according to our needs, but it is always there. And this concept of time prevents us from experiencing fully this very instant. The confusion or pretension that we have 1 hour, 1 year or 10 years, this confusion dilutes our very presence in this instant. It's like if something is put into salt, into water, a lot of water, and then all that is diluted. So our very sense of being here and now, that is diluted when we have the sense that we have time. The notion of time, referring back to this French writer, sense of duration is concealing life from us. There is no way that we may experience the fullness of our being when this being is spread out in time. So the notion of time and duration is very tricky, because if I would now mention some concepts, can we just stay right now and see that what I may mention is just a concept arising now and not being carried away by what it's intended to mean? If I said yesterday, can we just see that now I am saying yesterday? But this yesterday does not exist. It is now I'm saying yesterday. Or I may say tomorrow, but right now. I may say 5 minutes, 1 hour, it is right now. Nothing else than just the concept arising now. And we may wonder, if I ask you to think about yesterday, so we may think about yesterday, but how long is it going to take us to think about yesterday? And will it be yesterday morning, afternoon? I may ask you to imagine one experience of yesterday. You may have in mind one experience, one moment of yesterday. So what time is it? silent. So we come back to this very moment, even with the notion of time, of yesterday, of tomorrow, or in 1 hour, or in 45 minutes. We are just left with this very instant. So some people, they have time, some they don't have time. But actually, we are all stuck in this very instant. To have time or not time, it doesn't change anything. It's just a way of speaking. I have time, I don't have time, but I only have this instant, whether I have time or no time. Maybe it makes me more important if I say I have no time, but yes, it's just in this very instant. So all our experiences from the five senses and from the mental consciousness just arise in this very instant. There is no way that we can experience what has gone or we can experience that will come in the future. Memory may bring something back right now, but we can't just go back yesterday or the day before or 1 year ago. Now if we listen to the gong, can you hear it again? Just get 1 minute, 30 seconds in the past, can you hear it again? I'm going to ring it again. Can you hear it already? Just now? Can we see what we saw this morning? Let me try. What did I really see this morning? Not bring a mental image of what was this morning, that's possible through memory. Now we can bring a mental image. But can I really see with my eyes the light which was in this morning, which was a daylight, not the electrical light? Can we do that? Or can I see the light that will be tomorrow morning? All our experiences are just happening in one instant and disappearing. Now we may hold on to concept of duration. And in this sense, covering the perception of what's happening right now, we are confusing the experience with a mental image, a concept. They are just connected. So there is no full experiencing of one, because it's covered by the notion of duration. So it's quite important to see in our practice how we keep on the perpetuation of the notion of duration. When something, some experience is arising and I wish to transform it, I wish to improve it, then I am at this time holding the notion of duration. There is no way that I may try to change something if I don't hold in my mind the notion of duration. So whenever there is something arising we don't accept, then we are perpetuating the notion of duration. Something is some pain in my knees, for example, then I start to organize it. How long will I bear it before I move? Now it's 5 minutes, I move it. How long will it last, release? Then maybe it lasts some time. There's already a planification there. And actually, I am there just bringing mental images, concept after concept, and I am not here for the experience itself. If we like to be very precise, imagine that when we are eating, I may, let's imagine, take some soup. if I am anticipating already that this spoon is going to be in my mouth, I am already in the duration. Maybe I could bring it there and stop. It's the anticipation of the end of the consequence of one action. It's just putting us in duration. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is expressed in a beautiful way when Arjuna is going on the battlefield and has some worries. Then Rama is telling him that he should not be concerned, concerned with the outcome of the action. That when one action is done, if one is just completely, fully with the action, one is not concerned with the outcome. Because the outcome depends on the quality of the action, not on the concern that we have for the action. Not the concern or the holding to some kind of result. So if we come to practice and we come to sit hoping to be concentrated or quiet for 10 minutes or half an hour, of course that's too much. We can just come to the experience this time, and if in the middle of our sitting we were peaceful before or not, it doesn't matter actually. What does matter is exactly now what's happening. It doesn't matter what will happen next. What does matter is the full experience of just what's arising in the moment. So our way of perceiving the world is depending on many concepts that we have and that we usually impose on the world, on our perception. So the notion of time is very important, of course. Let's see a bit some other example. Imagine that I looked at someone and I said, oh, I have the same sweater in my home. Same sweater. Now, okay, so we have two sweaters. So which one is the same? So mine is same and maybe this one is same. So we can say they are the same. Now if two other persons have the same blue sweater, does it mean that all those sweaters are the same? Because we say this is same and those are same, but they are not of the same color. So it's just a way of perceiving. Now I am adding my own way of perceiving something. It's just a matter of my way of seeing the world. A person may come into dining hall and one may see this person in one way or another way, because maybe for some reason I may imagine that the person before, I imagine maybe this person come with a bad intention. Maybe I've seen the person shouting outside and then now he is coming inside and I said, oh, this person may be upset. And maybe the person come and is very peaceful. Or let's say in a meditation course, somebody said, oh, he is the richest man of the country, just seated in our course. So whenever I see this man, I say, oh, that's the richest man in the country. And he's coming and I have this view, he's the richest man of the country. Well, at the end I learned that I was mistaken, that was a man next to him. So, well, too bad for this one, he's not the richest man in the country. Yet it just shows that the way of seeing is what, in a sense, how we structure our world. Of course, those are gross examples, but we may have many more examples of this type. Just a way of seeing one person, another person, or one experience. All that's happening in our mind, here the way that I believe this man is the richest man in the country, and whatever else, is just a world of concept, of thought and images. And usually I am mixing all those images and concepts with what I perceive, with the senses. I mix them up in a way that, in a sense, I'm confused. I don't exactly know what is from my way of seeing, from my projection, and what is really the experience of the world. We saw with the notion of duration, how I may believe that it's something which belongs to the experience themselves, well, we may have just tried to explore, how I may just project that. So in a sense, what's happening in our mind, we are mixing that with all the sense information, and then we are confused. Then we start to believe what we, or we start to perceive what we believe. Remember this example of the Chinese artist painting the tiger and running away. Sometimes we paint something else, then we try to grasp it. So all those type of way of structuring our world is like painting of our own that suddenly are conditioning us. They are like the bar of our jail, and this way that we are actually imprisoned, not free, is not because there is some big wall around us that needs to be broken. It is rather that we are holding in front of ourselves the bar of our jails, and we are going around the world like that and say, oh, it's too bad, I wish I could go outside. But we are just holding those bars. And those bars are just the concepts of what we are imposing into our life and into our world. In our meditation, we try, by the practice, to realize that those bars, I am holding them in front of me. And those bars, they get their solidities from my grasping to them. Not because there's any strong existence, that they are really still in the world in a very strong way. I remember once I was giving a course in California, and there was a meditator there, and she had done a lot of retreats, 15 retreats of 3 months, and sat very long time. So I was very pleased. That was the first retreat I gave in California. So that's very sweet of her to come and see that my 5-day retreat, which is very short, if you imagine, with respect to a 3-month course. And 3 days within the retreat, after that she did not come anymore to my guided meditation, to my Dharma talk, and I thought, well, maybe she's not so pleased with what I'm teaching. She had so many teaching and so many great teachers, and I thought, maybe, well, she's not so pleased. And at the end, I saw her in an interview, and she said she had so much pain, she could not sit anymore, so she was very sorry she could not come to the sitting and to my Dharma talk. So I had my own reading of the experience, which was nothing to do with the situation. So those are examples, quite complex, and we can recognize them easily. But in our sitting, same thing is happening. When there is a pain in some part of our body, for example, then the pain is already a concept, like the concept of time, that I am actually imposing into some physical experience. Then I may react to that. Like I may imagine not speak to this lady anymore because she did not come to my Dharma talk. No, that would be the reaction. Not a proper reaction, but that would be a reaction. So in a sense, if I see the sensation that I have in my knee as pain, then I may withdraw from it, try not to feel it. Because I impose this concept on this physical sensation as pain. But pain has no characteristic, is not a characteristic of a physical sensation. Pain describes a reaction to some physical sensation, because a pain, or what we call a pain or painful sensation, could be very hot, very cold, high vibration, tension, or whatever. All they will be called pain if they are too intense. And all will be called pain if I wish to withdraw from them. But actually what's happening there, pain does not describe. Just pain describe my reaction to it. So when we are seated, there is a constant game of way of interpreting our experience and reacting not to what we experience, but in a sense to the concept that we are mixing with the experience. And it's not that we're going to fight against those concept, mental images that may arise in our meditation, but if we can recognize just, okay, that's my thought, that's my mental image, and then the experience. Suddenly we see that how much the thought and how much the mental image were conditioning my reaction. I'm not here saying that when you don't say it's pain and you say it's vibration, suddenly it's pleasing. That no way, it can stay intense, and that can stay that we don't like it. Not that. But at least we start to see the space of freedom when we don't confuse anymore the concept, the mental image, with the experience. There may be judgment. I'm sitting in my meditation and then judgment arrives. It's a bad meditation. I'm a bad meditator. Or I'm a good meditator. And this has nothing to do with my experience. And I believe, or that has something to do. This is really the reality of my meditation. But my meditation is what it is. And this judgment is just another world. It's a world of thought and concept. Well, I was experiencing sensation or whatever. Sometimes listening to a Dharma talk, and when we teach with some friends, come with closed eyes, and sometimes you like things and sometimes you wonder what is the topic, and I could recognize sometimes kind of judgment. Well, that is interesting, well, that is boring. Then I found out after some time, it has nothing to do with the Dharma talk. It's just my own words that come in, with my own program, they come interesting, boring, fascinating, or whatever. But the other person is speaking his or her Dharma talk, and they are not linked. I may believe that it is not the truth about what he said. It's just my mental world. It has been moved from some cause and condition. But my concept there have no, by no means are connected, and they are not the truth of hear what is spoken. So in our practice it's very important, all our development will be to be less and less caught in what we are adding to the experience themselves. And therefore less reactive to what we have added to the experience. Like notion of time, of judgment. And something that we may bring along into our meditation, which make it very painful, it is anticipation of some result and the fear of something that may happen. When we are in our sitting, move between those two poles, which is hope and fear, then there is no way that we can be really with the experience. So I hope and I anticipate what I experienced this morning or last retreat or last year. I wish that to come back. So what's happening if I am here trying to be aware of my bodily sensation, and then is not so fascinating, then the mind is trying to grasp or trying to bring back the experience which I had yesterday or one retreat ago. What's happening then? I am just in a mental image. So my anticipation is that this morning I was really in connection with my body sensation. So now I try to bring that back with mental images. So that lead me even further from the very experience which is happening now. Then I get a sense of frustration because that's not what's happening. So I grasp even more to the anticipation. I want that back. You know, oh no, that's not really what I'm experiencing. I want that back. It doesn't need to be, of course, so gross. It can be a very slight movement of the mind. Anticipation, even an anticipation, very small, which may be not even a split of a second, that is enough to keep us away from the experience. Not that if I anticipate 1 year ago or just one incident, this anticipation cut me from the very experience or the fear that I experienced pain this morning and all that may arise again. So what I'm experiencing now, it's a mental image of an experience, not what's just right now. So first in our practice there may be different moments. The first moment may be when we are kind of concerned and observing the contents. So we come here and sit and we think about something, about our work, about our family, and all those things are happening, and then we hear sounds, we hear the dog, and we hear the door, and we hear people walking in the room, and we can hear all those sounds. And when we are in the dining hall, then we are, you know, tasting or eating the soup, which is salted maybe, and then the jam or something like that. So we have different type of experience, which is the dog barking, which is the source of my work or my family, and which is a taste of this food or that food. So that's what we may be experiencing. Then as the mind becomes slightly more present and more aware, then we are not so much more fascinated by the contents. Now, when we have thought for 10,000 times about the same thing, about our family, our work, then, okay, now I've thought all the possibilities, and maybe one starts to be aware that, oh, just I am thinking. I'm not experiencing the body sensation. Then one goes from the contents to the process. What's happening? Oh, I am thinking. Then one gets back to bodily sensation. So now I am sensing. And maybe there is a noise outside, or I am hearing. And hearing is slightly different from sensing the body sensation and from thinking. So I'm not now concerned that it is a dog, I'm just hearing. That's my experience. And that is a very, very important shift when we go from hearing the airplane or hearing the dog to the hearing itself. We go from the concern from what is outside of ourselves. And we come to a much stronger connection with ourselves, because hearing is what I am experiencing. Thinking is what I am experiencing. Sensing my body sensation is what I am experiencing. So from the contents, we come to the process. And that can be with all the senses. Some are easier to work with, some more difficult. And then you may, in the dining hall, start to feel the touch of the spoon. So there's a bodily sensation. And then suddenly there's tasting. And that's different from the bodily sensation, which is hot or cold, and the tasting, which are all the characteristics of taste, you know, salted or sweet or whatever. Then one gets not so much concerned here with this food or that, but suddenly one comes to one's own experience, I am tasting. The consciousness is of tasting, as it may be of hearing at other times. And that also may be your seeing. Walking outside, then I'm seeing. Then I'm sensing my bodily sensation, and suddenly I'm stopping and I'm seeing. Again, I'm not concerned with the tree or the mountain, but just that the experience is of seeing. In this shift, there is a start to be a deep connection within oneself. One starts to feel much more present, much more alive. Not concerned with trees, mountains, dog, and airplane, but rather with just being myself, hearing, seeing, tasting. When the mind is getting not so much interested into the object, now it has been connected with the experience themselves, then at times one may realize that things are changing, that this hearing is just changing, 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 that I can't hold on to it, because the concept which was giving some sense of duration that has been recognized, the one is not grasping to it, then suddenly one sees that everything is changing, changing. There is a seeing, and then there is a hearing, there is a bodily sensation that may arise and disappear and change. It turns very fast, like vibration. Then one starts to see, we say we go from contents to process, and now we see the nature of our experiences, the nature of ourselves and the nature of our world. The nature we see when we don't hold to concept anymore. The first aspect is that everything is changing very fast. And then seeing that or realizing this, that they are changing so fast, one sees that one can trust anything. There is no way that one can say, I like that, because that has gone already. Then I really wish that I could have that. It has gone. So one starts to realize that there is nothing which is worth having, because it's changing, changing and changing so fast. So there may be some element of disappointment, because all our way of hoping for something, we see that all the field where we could hope for something, all the sense pleasure or whatever experience, we see that is completely, in a sense, not trustworthy. All where we had put our trust, hoping to find some satisfaction, we see that not possible, because everything is changing. We had misplaced our hope for satisfaction. And there may be some disappointment there. No satisfaction where I expected that I could find. Even if I imagine the situation being the best I could imagine, still the nature is such that it will change, and that cannot bring satisfaction. However I may imagine, I will gather all the best conditions that I could have imagined or looked for, because by nature it will change. So there is an element of disappointment seeing this changing nature of the experiences. Now since things are changing so fast, arising and disappearing, one also sees that there is no element within them, no nature within them, which is lasting, which I can hold onto that, the nature of that experience, because it's changing, changing. So there is no selfhood in any experience. There is no concrete reality in our experience and in what we're experiencing. So one starts to realize what is called the emptiness of the experiences and of the world. This emptiness is emptiness of something which will be a real essence, that will be outside of the conditioning of what's happening. Some element which will be there that one can really grasp, and that's really the essence of that experience or that phenomenon. However, usually with our conceptual world, we put the sense of existing in the real existence, in what we perceive, in the world in which we are. And certainly we do it in a very strong way with respect to what we call ourselves. It's a sense with respect to this experience, this complex phenomena that is ourselves, that we grasp it in a sense that we believe there is something essential there, something which is really existing, which is I, which is me. But the way that we are experiencing that actually is not very coherent. If we look at it, we see that it's not logical at all. There is some kind of incoherence. Yet, we still hold on to this way of perceiving. We'll not go too much into that, but it's important still to mention it. Like, I have the sense that when I was six, it was me. I was six. When I was 10, it was me. It's not that there was one child at 6, one child at 10, one child at 20, one child at 50. It's no sense that there was a different self. Now, I may say, now I am short. I may have said I am short at 10. I may have said I am short at 6. Well, my body has changed. Certainly no one cell is the same as when I was 6 or 10. Yet, I have the sense that there is a self, I am, which is the same, connected to something which has completely changed. So if I would see from outside, I would say, yes, this body has completely changed, it has transformed completely. Like, nearly like when you put a seed in the ground and you have a flower after that. Well, there is a change. Very important. Yet, I have the sense that it's still I, it's still me. So I am short. So when I say I am short, I mean I have some weight, I have some temperature, all the physical characteristics. Now I may say I am sad. So of course it's not physical characteristic, it's something which is mental and emotional. So we may shift the way that we are shifting our sense of I and me. It's just that we connect it to whatever is there. So when I'm experiencing my body, I say I. So that's me. And then I change my mind, not knowing it, then I said I'm sad. Or I think. Then I've changed my mind. Now I am just a mental. I am thinking. So I just change my mind every time something else happens. I'm sad. So if I was really sad, I could not be happy at another time. If I was sad, then I would be sadness. There will be a connection. And then I'm happy. So I've changed my mind. So there is, in a way of experiencing, that we just see the field of experience, bodily experiences and mental experience, we see in a way that exactly as we can structure time with our experience, there we impose a structure of a sense of self. And as much as time can be conditioning us, or as this French writer said, concealing life from us, as much this sense of self that we are imposing into our experience. Do also impose a lot of limitation and bring a lot of suffering. This sense of I, with connection of my body, I am tall, or I am short, then of course all the conditioning of the fragility of my body is also my fragility. So I am sick. So I am becoming old, so I am becoming weak. Then this way of connecting this notion of self with the body or with the emotion, to join this kind of train of phenomena, make that I, by the same movement, I get all the problems that those phenomena. Now in our meditation, when we come to the experience of the bodily sensation, of thoughts, concepts, of emotions, sometimes we may see how we bring along this sense of self. Not that we will dismiss it when it will arrive. No, I push it away. On the contrary, when I started the meditation in India with a Tibetan teacher, and he taught me about nonsense, but he said, first you have to meditate and to be sure you know what the self is. So say you go in your room, and then every day I would meditate for 2 hours. He said, you should be sure, and said, now exactly know who I am, what I am. And when you know that, then we'll question its reality. It's not that we start and said, I will avoid it, I will not see self because, you know, it's pretty stuff, it seems interesting, there is no self, and then I get rid of so much problem. It's not that. It is rather that we start to see how we bring it along within our own experience, and not that we are going to throw it away, because then we still will say I and me, otherwise we'll not be able to communicate and to understand each other, but we'll not cling to it, cling to its reality. We may come back to this subject, which is of course a very vast and important subject. So in our practice we have three movements, from the contents to the process to the nature. And when we see very clearly this nature changing, that there is some disappointment, that we cannot really get any satisfaction, and that there is no self-entity going from one moment to another moment, then at this time, grasping is stopped. When we see that there is nothing we can grasp, because it's changing, and when there is no grasping, at this time we have let go of the bow of our chin. So all our meditation in the Buddhist tradition, whatever system is, all the meditation is just for the sake of non-grasping. Our technique, and whatever the technique may be in whichever system, Zen, Theravada, Tibetan, all come down to non-grasping. And for this non-grasping to happen, we need to be very close to our experiences. We need to develop a very deep intimacy with each instant of our experience. When we keep at some distance, there is a grasping which holds ourselves at some distance of our experiences. So only through the intimacy of the experience can we really realize the nature, and realizing these three characteristics, then there will be no more grasping. And grasping is like what frees all our experience, what frees the bow of our chains, what frees our conditioning. And when this grasping is gone, at this time, there is experience of freedom. And that can only be through the practice. So meditation in a vast sense, it doesn't need to be exactly the form we are using, but that cannot be reached by thinking. Because thinking and the thought process give something to grasp. That's how the language works. The language works because it gives something to grasp, and is very useful in this sense. But when we try to go beyond grasping, the language is that we'll just hold on to something. Sometimes in the Zen tradition they'll use language, but they have to twist it, to use it in a very specific way to go beyond the grasping. They use like the Quran, where it is a kind of question which is senseless. Then this language is self-defeating. That means that the meditator will let go of the language, not that he's going to keep the language. but in a general sense, the practice of meditation is for the experiencing of something which is beyond concept. Therefore, as much as we may think about it in our meditation, that's not going to be able to take the place of experience. I'm just going to keep on grasping. So we may sit for a few minutes in silence.